Live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications Headquarters, you're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
All right, gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. My name is Scott McKay, at Scott McKay on Twitter, Real Scott McKay on Instagram, Scott McKay on YouTube. The Facebook group, as always, is the Mountaintop Summit, and www.mountaintoppodcast.com is the website. On today's show, we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about relationships, you and the woman of your dreams. And I'm going to introduce to you a new friend of mine who is a pretty cool guy. I think you're going to like him. He's a man's man. And he has just completed a long period of world travel with the woman of his dreams. And we're going to talk about that just a little bit. But bear in mind, the subject of this show isn't going to be the world travel. It's going to be the fact that in order to survive something like 18 months of straight world travel with a woman, she has to be your soulmate. She has to be this woman who's practically getting along with you in just about every way. That led to the true topic of today's show, which is the 100 to nothing relationship, meaning it's 100% you, 100% her. It's not 50-50. You're both giving to each other. You're both being completely authentic with each other. And I loved the way he put that so much that I indeed made it the focus of this whole show. So without any further ado, Matt Javitt, how's it going, man?
It's fantastic. Great to be with you today.
Yeah, you know what? You had a very interesting outlook on the global trip you just took with your wife for, you know, months and months and months. I want you to tell these guys a little bit about that, and I want you to tell them also about the videos you did, because I think that's pretty interesting.
Okay, excellent. At a high level, we're going on 14 years of marriage, my wife and I. Prior to leaving, I was in the technology field with services sales, 9 years at the same company. My wife was a clinical pharmacist. And we together, we had goals and dreams of traveling the world full time at some point. So through that discipline to save the money and through just the ideas and the partnerships and the dream sharing, we turned our dream into a reality. And we set out in February 2017, and we just returned home in May of 2019 after seeing 35 countries, over 100 cities during that time. And it's one of those things where we had traveled before together, so we knew we could do it, and we knew we enjoyed that time in different cities and exotic places. And so we it wasn't that big of a stretch, although we were leaving what people would consider a great life. We both loved our jobs. We both are deep into the community and the city we live in, and we love our families and friends, but we just wanted to set out and do something adventurous and discover more that was out there in travel and see different parts of the world that we just had dreamed about.
Yeah. And about the video series that you shot while you were traveling, I think it was really innovative. Tell these guys a little bit more about that.
Yeah, thanks. About almost a year into it, I found myself in Bucharest, Romania, in the barber chair. And I'd gotten haircuts and shaves in different parts of the world up to that point. And I was talking to the barber there and telling him about our experience, our travels, and telling him how all the barbers around the world were different in their techniques and their styles. So from that conversation, I went back home and talked to Nikki, my wife, about it. I told her, I said, I think we need to start documenting this and recording these sessions. And from that spun out World Barbershop Adventures, which is a YouTube series that we've created that shows me in the barber chairs getting all these different crazy cuts around the world. But also shows a bit of the culture and our experience in the city, kind of like an Anthony Bourdain-ish type of video where I talk a little bit about the city, but then show a significant time in the barber shop as well.
So as Anthony Bourdain is to cuisine, you are to barbershops. Pretty much.
Yeah, that's my hope. And as you see there, I mean, there's so many people that do food, but we're pretty unique in what we're captivating in the barbershop experience, because to be real, the experience alone was unique enough that if I could capture it, I know that like there's not a lot of guys out there that are just traveling to do barbershops. You know what I mean? So that made it pretty easy to be unique.
Yeah. Nikki was behind the camera, huh?
Yeah. And that's part of you talk about the partnership and being each other's supporter and fan. That's just another example of that relationship.
Now, see, here in the States, if there's a woman in the barbershop, the whole culture changes.
That is true. And the reality was, is that was kind of my time. And you talk about being 24/7 with somebody on the road. That typically was my time to just go to the barbershop, be around other guys, even if they're not speaking the same language, just having that bond. But it's one of those things where it just made sense for her to do the filming, and she does a great job at it. And so we just had to go that route, and I had to bring her along in the barbershop.
Now, you were a Division I basketball player too, so I understand.
Yeah, that's right. I played I played Division I, and I coached at a junior college while I got my graduate degree down in Texas.
Have you found, like I have, that basketball is becoming kind of an international language more and more? As basketball is discovered globally, it seems like you can talk about the NBA with just about any guy anywhere in the world.
As far as American sports go, I think the NBA is the one that does go across the borders. And you see a lot of jerseys around the world. The other sports, like our American football, even though it's the biggest sport in America, it doesn't translate well to other places because soccer or football, as it's known everywhere else, is much more popular. So yeah, you're right. Basketball is it's easy to talk about the different teams that are going on, especially as you have a ton of international players in the league right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've indeed found that basketball is by far the most portable American sport, especially the NBA as a league. Now, talking about this 100-to-nothing relationship, you know, obviously we're here because you and your wife spent 24/7 FaceTime together dealing with all the puzzles and travails of world travel that eventually come up. I mean, they inevitably come up. And yet you still adore each other. You still love each other. It reminds me of what I've always taught guys since the very beginning of my tenure as a coach, that the best way to get to know a woman, to evaluate really whether you're going to get along long term, is to take a road trip. I mean, put some windshield time in together. Make it like 1,200 miles worth over 4 or 5 days. Because if you're going to get into an argument, if you're going to start discovering sticking points that you have in your relationship together, that's going to root them all out like cockroaches from a floorboard. I mean, they're going to come out from everywhere. All the little difficulties you have relating, the ways you irk each other, the ways you piss each other off. If they're going to come out, they're going to come out when you're on a road trip. So you and your wife obviously knew each other pretty well before you set out on this globe trekking adventure that you went on for months and months and months. But how did you find that trip challenged your relationship, and how did you find that it strengthened your relationship?
Your point's dead on. So there's an awesome YouTube clip out there where Bill Murray, the comedic actor, stumbles upon a bachelor party, and these guys are asking Bill, like, what's the secret to success with a woman? And he says exactly what you're describing. He said, pack up, travel the world for a year. If you still like each other when you come home, marry the girl. And it's the truth. If you can spend enough time with that significant other and you don't want to strangle them or just want to part ways, you can really build upon a lot because you're going to go through so much more. Everything in travel is amplified, and the smallest things can become big really quick if you let them agitate you and if you don't work through it rather quickly. So communication has to be is critical. And then especially when you're spending as much time as we did with each other, and we knew that we were going to spend that much time together, then you really have to work through things quickly. Because at home, if you get in an argument, you both have your jobs, or you have different relationships with friends, that you can kind of separate and get away from each other, take a deep breath, and then come back a day or 2 days after if you're not talking to each other for that period of time, and then kind of make up and then go about your business. And when you're traveling full time, you know that next morning you're going to be waking up with that person, potentially going somewhere, taking a long bus ride, or hoping to see some great sights. You got to work through things quickly. And so communication gets extremely important throughout the whole process. So we learned a great deal about each other. I got to see her toughness in action many, many times. We've always been each other's biggest supporters and fans, but we took it to another level during this trip and then even after the trip.
Yeah, the whole concept of world travel, especially world adventure travel like you and Nikki do and Emily and I do, is just replete with irony. I mean, it's exciting for the same reasons it's terrifying. You're going to be guaranteed to be taken out of your comfort familiarity zone constantly. There is no such thing. I mean, that's why you're there, for the adventure, for having to figure out the puzzles, for having to deal with whatever comes up and think on your feet. It's a lot of fun for the right people who love doing that. It's very frustrating for a bunch of people who would rather just relax on the beach, obviously, although we've done our fair share of that too. But it is really going to absolutely magnify whatever is going on in your relationship as if you put it all under a microscope. You get to know each other in such a variety of situations and even unexpected situations. And that, in my mind, Matt, see if you agree, is why this idea of traveling together really helps you get to know each other, because it's not on your schedule. It's not, okay, here's my cute little checklist of things I have to check off. Can we do this together? Can we do that? Hell no. There's going to be stuff thrown at you from left field that you don't even know is coming. And the way you handle it together is going to be the absolute best measure of whether you're truly compatible or not, right?
Absolutely. And seeing that partner of yours, how they handle the pressures of timelines to get to an airport, or the uncomforts of a very tight bus trip, things like that, you begin to see the true personality of somebody, because you can fake it. Even in marriages, you can fake it, because a lot of marriages, if you're working 45, 50 hours a week, you're coming home. We don't have children, but if you have kids involved, you're doing all those duties. And then the true time you spend with each other is maybe 2 hours, an hour and a half a night. You can fake those interactions, and you're not going to be very happy. That's not a great relationship, but if you're faking that, but if in a situation like we were in, you can't fake it. You're just living. And so it's very raw. I'm probably an annoyingly positive person. So I had to understand that I see everything in a very optimistic manner, where Nikki might not always see it that way. So we can experience the exact same thing in the exact same situation, but have to recall the scenario two totally different ways. And as you're going through that and you begin to understand that, you begin to understand your partner better in that way, you grow. It just compounds your growth as a relationship, because you're truly seeing who they are as a person. And then it makes the relationship even deeper, because you get to know them on a higher level than you ever would.
Yeah, I think there's a huge misconception out there about relationships that people who are exactly alike personality-wise are going to be the ones who get along the best. Yeah, there's some element of truth to that. I mean, Emily and I agree on a lot of things, but I think it's really poignant that you just said, for example, you're the eternal optimist and she can be a little bit more realistic and, you know, and level set the whole situation more realistically sometimes. And yeah. What I'm hearing and what you're saying is that the two of you get each other. You know what's going on in each other's mind. And with that comes the ability to communicate and trust each other. And see, that trust is what drives that ability to enjoy each other's differences personality-wise. So she knows when you're trying to drive some optimism vis-a-vis a particularly challenging situation that she may be stressing out over, you're probably right. She needs to lighten up a little bit. Meanwhile, if the chips are down and something that has to be taken care of is going on, and she has a keener awareness of just how true that is than you do, and you're trying to, you know, live in this Pollyanna-ish world where everything's still okay, she may take you by the shirt collar and go, "Hey, look, stupid, we got to get this taken care of." And you'll go, "Oh, okay, because I trust her, I'm not going to take that personally. We're going to just have to buckle down and do this." Interestingly enough, while you were talking, I started to realize that my wife and I are more like Maxwell Smart and Agent 99 when we're on trips. I'm going around bumbling, thinking I'm real smart. You know, "Oh, I got this taxi cab thing taken care of. Watch me pull this cool little MacGyver ninja trick." And then we end up, you know, screwed out of $80 or something. And my wife's still trying to be supportive and still trying to see me as her hero. And I'm trying to make right decisions because I'm the man of the house, and she wants me to make decisions because she's a woman. And I mean well, and I generally keep us all pretty safe, and she genuinely trusts that. But at times she has to kind of interject, "Hey, you know, maybe you might want to try this." It's like, exactly what I was going to say. That's exactly what we should be doing. And she just kind of shrugs her shoulders. I mean, it's like a Get Smart episode a lot of times when we're traveling. Now, that said, you said something very, very important. You don't have any children. Well, let me tell you something, Matt Javitt. Once you two pop out a couple of kids and you start world schooling and taking them with you, you got another whole ball game coming to you. It becomes all of a sudden a three-dimensional puzzle. It goes from jigsaw puzzle to Rubik's Cube because, you know, the kids get sick or they don't like the food or one of them decides to wander off with someone and you're scrambling to chase him before he gets kidnapped and taken to Algeria or something. Let's talk for a second about delayed flights that were supposed to take off at 9 o'clock and now all of a sudden it's 3:30 in the morning and your tour starts in 2 hours in another country and you've got two children. Crazy. Crazy stuff. And yet, I would say that it was a truer test of our relationship before we had kids to travel together because we only had each other. The kids actually allow you to divert your attention towards them instead of being in the position to focus on the relationship together all the time. I think that's an important distinction. So yeah, I mean, even though the world travel is greatly complicated by children, you mentioned something that I think is worth elaborating on a little bit. A lot of couples kind of fall into this rote routine and they really don't have to relate anymore. They get up tomorrow morning, they kiss each other, they go off to their respective jobs, they come home, decide what's for dinner, watch the news on TV, fall asleep in bed, wake up the next morning and do it again. And that just doesn't involve a whole lot of depth. Do you think couples make a conscious decision to fall into that rote routine specifically because they're afraid to get to know each other? Or do you think it's just something that's cultural here in the West and we kind of just fall into the trap?
It's difficult to answer. I'll say it this way, and this is the best way I can talk about from our relationship. The fact that we're going on 14 years of marriage with no children to me is significant with the fact that we're not together because of children. I met a lot of couples, you've probably met them as well, that you can see that they're no longer in love, but they're doing it. They're keeping their marriage alive because of the children. And then as soon as the kids get out of the house, they end up getting a divorce. Where Nikki and I, our full decision to stay together is because of our love for each other and our partnership with our marriage, where we don't have, if you want to call it a crutch or whatever, the reasons to stay together with the children. Yeah, so we're together because we want to be together. And a lot of couples that we've met, and some couples we even met on the road that maybe were on vacation away from their children, you can see that their bond is just not there. And then spending that much time during travel, when they have 10 days on a vacation and then they meet up with us and we see them on day six, and we're like, wow, they don't like being around each other. Because at home, they have so many distractions on not spending time together. So when they're out traveling together for vacation and they're spending 24/7 together for 6 days, you can see that their relationship is not that great. So I'm very proud of the idea that we're together because we want to be together. And I think a lot of that has to do with what you're talking about, this 100-0 type ideal. And when I met Nikki, she met the rawest version of me. Behind the bar, bartending, she walked in. I fell in love right away. But I knew as I was approaching her and courting her to be my girlfriend and become my fiance and become my wife all within about 15 months, I knew that I had to be as real as possible with her. So she got the sports junkie, the gambler, the dude that likes to drink, the guy that likes to hang out with his buddies. She had to get the realest form of me in order for me to be able to be real with her for the rest of my life. And she gave me the most authentic part of her as well. I knew about her history, her friends, everything about her that might not be shiny and awesome, but I knew that together we would be an awesome match because we both knew our flaws, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, before we move into that topic, which I think is brilliant and a great segue, by the way, good job, I want to go ahead and flash back to what you said a couple minutes ago. Emily and I have seen the exact same thing. We go on trips and we see other couples who are on vacation together and we keep running into them. And yes, it's like they're foreshadowing what it's going to be like to have empty nest syndrome later. They realize, oh my God, we don't get along. We're nothing without the busyness and without the routine and without the children we have to take care of. Without that, there's nothing. So I have huge respect for what you just said about spending 14 years married to this woman and still being just crazy about each other enough to want to spend that much time together. Another thing that goes along with that is I'm reminded how Emily and I are asked so often, how can you two spend so much time together? You work in the business together. You know, you have your kids around you all the time because you're homeschooling them. How do you do that? How do you survive that? And we just kind of look at them and go, well, we adore each other. This is how we want it. I mean, when my wife is gone for a few hours, I already miss her. When the kids are gone for a few hours, I already miss them. And yet, you're right. Couples get married and it really isn't about their relationship. It's about whatever else they have going on that helps them feel like they're staying together because of some greater good or even some obligation, if you want to reduce it to that. And that's just sad. And it all starts with picking the right woman. And what you said about authenticity and how she was seeing the real you from the very beginning not only reflects on a solid self-esteem and the desire to have a real relationship, but it was also leadership in a very real way, because all of a sudden she said, hey, look, you know what? I can trust this guy. This guy is making me feel safe and comfortable because I know I'm dealing with the real Matt. So she gave you the real version of herself in following your lead. And that's the only way to go. All these people who are faking it on first dates and trying to be someone they're not, what they're doing is they're setting a very dangerous precedent for not ever connecting with the person they're sitting across from. So, you know, thank you for bringing that up. And I think that's what leads to the 100-to-nothing relationship.
Absolutely. And just so you know that we're not like a perfect couple that we see everything the same way. As we traveled, I'm much more extroverted. I like to hang out with a lot of people. I like to go, I went to co-works around the world just so I could interact with other people and understand their business ideas and just get, have that buzz of an atmosphere in a work environment. So I did that on a regular, where Nikki would be okay staying back in the Airbnb, watching Netflix, hanging out sometimes, or working on her side projects. So we weren't together all the time, but because we both know, she knows that I need that interaction. She knows that I like to have late nights out, things like that, that might not always be what she wants to do. She balances that. She understands who I am as a guy. I'm a guy's guy. People ask me all the time, what do you miss so much about traveling the world during the journey? And it was always my guys. I missed being around the fellas, talking sports, having bourbons, smoking cigars on occasion, doing those things around with my fellas. So when I was with her 24/7, it was difficult at times, but she knew that I had to break away, meet new people, hang out, and get that interaction that I was craving, whether it's going to a sports bar, seeing local sports that way. It was amazing because we had to go see sumo wrestling, Muay Thai fighting, soccer matches, rugby matches around different places. And I knew she did that not because she likes sports. She likes being there, but she was doing it for me. And just the same way that I would do things for her, that's that 100-to-0 that you're talking about. That's really important to me and to our relationship.
And, you know, I have to tell you, it wasn't my intention to lead anybody on into believing that in our relationship, we're joined at the hip 24/7. I mean, she does leave and do other things. And when we're on trips, sometimes she goes and gets a mani-pedi and I go do something else. So yeah, I mean, there's time that's apart. Still, it doesn't take anything away from the fact that when you are traveling the world together, your relationship really is put to the test because you are spending a lot of time together. So I thank you for clarifying that. Yet I don't think it changes the simple concept we're talking about one iota, that you got to be with the right woman in order for this stuff to work. You know, this adventuring, this world travel stuff. And it's a great way to figure out whether that's the case or not. But yeah, sometimes you got to get out and breathe the oxygen a little bit.
Absolutely. And it translates so well when you come home also is that bond just continues to grow as you support each other in your next phase of life.
Yeah, because you built that trust and that trust is for real.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what are some other tenets of this 100-to-nothing relationship? Maybe we need to describe it a little better. I mean, I described it a little bit at the beginning of the show. What's your take on it?
So I learned it early in my marriage. I don't know. Somebody wise told me, but it was a scenario where people were talking about percentages and what percentage should you give? What's the percentage breakdown of a relationship? And people were saying, well, it should be 50-50. Maybe it's 75-25 or 60-40. And I heard it described, it should be 100% to 0. Just don't expect anything from your partner. Do everything that you can to make the relationship as strong as possible and don't expect anything in return. And if you do that all the time, you begin to see it reciprocates and it's you both have the same intentions to making the most out of your marriage. Because if you constantly have expectations of somebody that's going to be, your girl's going to be able to do certain things for you because you did X you're always going to be let down because no matter what, like I described, me and Nikki would go through the exact same scenarios on the road and we would come away seeing this situation differently. So our perception, the man's perception of what we go through is so much different than a woman's perception. So if you think that you're going to be able to give a certain amount to that, to someone you love and expect that they're going to see it the same way that you're doing, they're not going to do that that way. I'm struggling to put it in the words, but the idea is if, like she goes to a sumo wrestling match with me because it's something I really want to do and it's something that I enjoy doing. And she might think that that's a really big deal. Where in my eyes, I'm like, wow, she gets to go. She's going to a sumo wrestling match as well. This is an amazing time. We're in Tokyo. This only happens a couple of times a year. This is a great event. She might walk out of there like, man, that was really boring. And I walk out of there thinking, man, that was awesome, wasn't it? So you can't always think that what you're bringing to the table is something positive for her because she might see it the other way and vice versa.
Out of pure curiosity, what did she end up thinking of sumo?
I assume she liked it.
Well, you know, it's funny. The reason why I mentioned that is Emily and I also went to sumo in Tokyo. And we did so under the same assumption that this was for me because it was something I wanted to do. And she was expecting to be bored. And because I love my wife, I didn't make her sit through the whole 6 or 8 hour routine. We only came for the last couple hours of it. And she was thrilled with it. She thought it was just the coolest thing ever. It exceeded her expectations in every way, and indeed mine too. You guys listening, if you ever get a chance to go to Tokyo, see if you can wedge your schedule around when they have sumo going on there. And, you know, they held it in, I think, Osaka and maybe, you know, somewhere else there at least once a year. But it's not something that goes on all the time. There were only two sumo tournaments a year in Tokyo. And
that's
it's
right.
Just awesome in person. I mean, the vibe and the emotion behind it is more than you ever expect. It's just a great, great experience. But getting back to the point here, what I think you're talking about, this idea where you're going to expect the best of each other and you're going to give to each other, comes down to two of the pillars of a great relationship, as I've talked about often, which are optimism and generosity. If you're giving to someone else and they're giving back to you, yeah, both of you are going to see this as a 100-to-nothing relationship. And the real beauty of that generosity, that mutual generosity, is that instead of, you know, kind of shoehorning out of the other person what you selfishly want them to give you, as you give to them and they give to you, you're going to receive so many wonderful surprise benefits from that that you never even asked for. So even people who are selfishly trying to manipulate each other, which has almost become the gold standard of Western relationships. It's even what dating relationship advice teaches, as we talked about a couple shows ago. Those people are only at best ever going to weasel out of it what they hoped to get out of it. Now, that in combination with optimism, meaning I'm thinking the best of you, she's thinking the best of me. If I leave for 40 minutes, she's not thinking, he's probably out sleeping with some chick. You know, I come home and I've brought home $100 worth of groceries. She believes I went out and got $100 worth of groceries. And because I'm optimistic and generous, I got her a special treat and I say, hey, look, here's your favorite, whatever it is. And she goes, oh, thank you. That's so key to a healthy relationship. And that's what I think of when I think of 100-to-nothing. I think that my significant other is 100% all in. She's in it to win it. She believes in this relationship as much as I believe, which is 100%. And as far as giving, yes, I'm here 100% for her. She's there 100% for me. There's no neediness. There's no, you know, subservience. There's no being beta to her alpha. What's going on here is you both adore each other and you're contributing and she's contributing. And then you have a relationship that instead of 1 + 1 = 2, 1 + 1 = 100. It's very simple in theory, yet nobody seems to be getting into relationships like this and cultivating them, do they, Matt?
I absolutely agree. The idea is we're both independent people, absolutely independent. We both have great careers. She's got her doctorate. We're both well-educated. And we would be fine on our own. But together, like you're saying, it's 1 + 1 = 3. It's we're so much more, our value as a couple and our support system together and the fact that we're each other's biggest fan means a lot. And gratitude, as you're describing, is so big. Just saying thank you constantly, making sure that she understands that I'm thankful for all that she brings to the table. She does the same with me. And the idea that we're in it together, there's no, you've got this, I've got this. Yeah, we both have our different focuses on the things that we like to do and bring to the table. But at the same time, there's no expectation. And that's the biggest thing I think that I see that other people don't do. It's a lot of complaining that so-and-so is not doing certain things, or I'm making all the money. She should expect to do certain things at the house. If you have that attitude and you're not showing gratitude for the things that are being done, why would somebody want to give more to the situation? And that's what I've always lived on gratitude, whether it's my career, spiritually, with my wife, my family. If you're not constantly saying thank you, then they're not going to know that you're appreciative of what they're bringing to the table.
Yeah, I think that gratitude is where optimism and generosity intersect. And the amazing thing about gratitude is it is like an insurance policy against taking anything for granted. So many people have perfectly good relationships. And because they take them for granted, those relationships start to slip and eventually they fade away. And I think that's really tragic. So I love what you just said about gratitude. Never, ever forget that the woman in your life is there because of some miraculous good fortune that you had. Yeah, I mean, you know, it wasn't luck. You had some skill involved in attracting her. But, you know, your good fortune in finding a great woman is absolutely massive. You can't overestimate it. And there are plenty of people out there who wish they had that relationship. And when they see someone from a third-party perspective who's taking for granted a wonderful relationship, it really just pisses them off. It's like when someone has great celebrity or great wealth and they're just bitching and complaining about it. It's like, oh, poor baby, you know. So I think that you just hit the nail on the head. Matt, I want to point these guys to your YouTube channel where they can see you going to barbershops all over the world and interacting with the fellas, like you said. It's fascinating to go to your YouTube channel and just start surfing through the videos, and you can just see the passion in your work. It's a little interesting. It's a little different, but it's definitely worthwhile to go surf around there for a while. So guys, go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/barber. And check out Matt's channel. I think you're really going to like it. And Matt, I want to thank you for just a terrific conversation from an informed perspective of what it's like to have a great relationship with a great woman. Because, you know, these guys hear from me all the time. And after a while, it becomes, you know, kind of old hat. But to have another dude come in here and give his version of a story of what it's like to have a great relationship with a great woman, I think is just flat out powerful. So thank you so much for spending the time with us today and sharing your story.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
And gentlemen, also be sure to go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com where you can download free reports and also get in on my daily newsletter where I give you free actionable information on how to get better with women, be a better man, and generally live life at the tip top of what you're capable of. And while you're there, be sure to schedule your free 25-minute call with me where we can talk about whatever you want. And if there's a coaching program that's a good fit for you, we can get your life on track and get you achieving the results you've always wanted. And until I talk to you again on the next episode, this is Scott McKay from XMY Communications in San Antonio, Texas. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is produced by X&Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the free X&Y Communications newsletter for men. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.